Call the Hess meeting together. Today is January 31st, 3:05. We'll be having a joint meeting today at 3:30 in 25 minutes. Senate will be wandering in, and the presentation will be a presentation on Alzheimer's. But before they get here, first, welcome back to Hess, the first meeting of the year, I guess. And with us are Representative Herron, Representative Miller, Representative Alan Dick, and myself, Representative Keller. Before we get started, we want to look at HCR 20, which is a resolution sponsored by Representative Peggy Wilson. And I believe there's at least one person online that you were hoping was going to testify. Am I right there? And there may be others in the room. But we'll try to be as quick as we can. And if we're efficient and nobody fights over your resolution, we might get it out of here before the joint meeting starts. So, yeah, it's a Dr. Urieta, is it? Urieta that will be calling in?
Okay. He's actually here.
Not quite yet. I have the information you'd be calling in, so not, yeah, of course. I just took me a while. I remember you now. I'm sorry. And then I guess Representative Millett is sick, and Representative Seaton had some kind of a conflict. I don't know what happened. And Representative Catula is at a funeral, so that's why we're kind of sparse in number today. I thought I'd explain that. Okay, HCR 20, without objection, we have LS 1245 Alpha, the original version of the bill, in front of us. And we'll, first thing we'll do is ask for the sponsor to explain what she's doing here, and then we'll give the committee a chance to ask her questions.
Okay.
Please go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Representative Wilson, and I represent District 2. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for hearing this resolution today. And I do understand that you're having a joint committee meeting, so I'll just jump straight to my points from my sponsor statement, and then you can have any questions. And I'll do this quickly in the interest of time. So Dr. Urieta, an American Heart Association volunteer, is also present to give testimony and to answer any further questions that he probably can answer better than I can. So HCR 20 raises awareness of the nation's leading cause of death, cardiovascular disease, by having the state of Alaska join the American Heart Association in celebrating February 2012 as American Heart Month. Nearly 2,200 Americans die of cardiovascular disease each day, an average of one death every 39 seconds, which amounts to direct and indirect costs estimated to be at $297.7 million a year, making this disease the costliest disease in the nation. Research shows that there are clear preventative and community-based strategies that can increase survival rates from this disease. And the American Heart Association, in their strategic impact goals, made a pledge that by 2020, that they will improve the cardiovascular health of all Americans by 20%, while reducing deaths from cardiovascular disease and stroke by 20%, hence 2020. By passing HCR 20, the state of Alaska will increase awareness of this deadly disease by encouraging citizens to learn the warning signs of heart attack and stroke by promoting February 2012 as American Heart Month. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope that you agree that this is important to for the state of Alaska and for the people of Alaska, that you can ask your questions and then move it out of committee.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Committee members, do you have any questions for the sponsor of the bill? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing this forward. Within the confines of what's in the language, I just looked at this rather quickly, is it only this year that we would designate, or is this going to be ongoing?
Right now, we're just doing this year.
Shooting for this year,
yeah.
Okay.
But we kind of do this every year, and so it might be, you know, if somebody wanted to make it permanent, I wouldn't
I have to admit, I certainly wouldn't object if we just put it into a steady diet of this every year. May I follow up, sir?
Follow up.
Within the resolution, you know, that we urge all citizens to recognize and be educated and so forth, is there any sort of planned program that discusses diet, exercise, smoking, any and all of these things as well? Is that already in place?
Yeah, well, and you know what? Someone from the American Heart Association is here, and I'm sure that they could fill you in on that very well.
Wonderful. I'll wait for that. Thank you.
Representative Harris.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the dialogue of making it permanent, though, on the surface, that appears would be a good thing. I would suggest that we do not do that because if you have to do this every year, it keeps the attention level. It keeps it on the forefront. If it would became or it was just matter of fact, then we'd probably forget about it. So, I mean, that's why, we spend a little bit of money to get a bill through or a resolution through the process, but the awareness campaign is just as important.
I do not object. I think that makes good sense.
Seeing no other questions from the committee, by the way, we're all in shape, right, and not overweight and that. So we're really into it. We'll open up public testimony now. And we'll start with Jamie Morgan in the room, American Heart Association, then we'll go to Dr. Urata after. Jamie, if you would state your name and your affiliation for the record so that the recorder can get it and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Morgan, and I work for the American Heart Association. Thank you for your time. We are pleased that Representative Wilson has authored this resolution and appreciate the committee's support. And to answer your question about educational programs, the Heart Association certainly has a number of programs throughout in the community, but we also have a number of resources on our website and materials that can be ordered. And certainly we can work with anyone here to do outreach to your constituents. So thank you for your time. We appreciate your support, and we urge your eye vote.
Okay, do you have any questions for Jamie? Seeing none, thank you. Dr. Urata. Welcome, and sorry I failed to put a name with a face. I saw you, I recognized you, but it just didn't click.
Oh.
If you wouldn't identify yourself for the record.
Quite all right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for allowing me to speak. My name is Bob Urata, and I'm a family physician born and raised in Wrangell, Alaska. I currently practice in Juneau, and I'm an American Heart Association volunteer since 2000. I'm here to speak in support of House Concurrent Resolution Number 20, which will designate February 2012 as American Heart Month in Alaska. It's clear that heart disease and stroke is a major cause of death and disability in this country. We lost another great Alaskan a few days ago in Romer Durr. Yet many deaths and disability from cardiovascular disease can be prevented. Avoiding key risk factors and treating those that are abnormal are important to reducing these deaths and disabilities. Maintaining a healthy weight, blood pressure, cholesterol, sugar, and not smoking are key risk factors that can lead to a longer life. According to the NIH, 1.6 million lives have been saved since 1977, and an estimated 44% of these decrease in death from heart disease was the result of prevention through reduction of risk factors. 44%. Despite two decades of improvement and progress, we are now facing a new threat, and that is overweight and obesity. Now, 27% of Alaskan high school students are overweight and obese. This will lead to an increase in high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. In addition, approximately 27% of the respondents knew the signs of heart attack, and only 7% would call 911 first if someone was having a heart attack or a stroke. So there's a disconnect between knowledge of heart disease and the signs and symptoms and then what to do if you are faced with this. Increasing awareness of risk factors and emergency care is a first step in reducing the risk of death and disability from this disease. Passing this resolution is an important step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. Does any of the committee have questions? Representative Herron?
Thank you, Doctor. And the stats are, you know, encouraging. At the same time, they're sobering because of new challenges we have with anything to do with the heart. But recently I watched a show on TV, and it was really interesting is that, you know, we've tried to make sure that people eat safe foods, but what they now do is manufacturers of food, they create these complex chemical formulas to make food taste better. And it may not be adding salt, but it's adding other compounds so that the taste buds want to eat more of that. Is that something that is the Heart Association trying to combat that effort by the food manufacturers?
I can't answer that question directly, but I think there's a science group, a group of scientists as part of the American Heart Association, who are always keeping an eye on nutrition, and I'm sure that they would be able to answer the question, and perhaps Jamie would be able to get the answer for you.
Jamie, again, when you start to speak, identify yourself just for the record.
Again, Jamie Morgan with the American Heart Association, and I think I am familiar with the show you watched, but the American Heart Association hasn't taken a position on that issue. That's not something we are promoting at this point or cautioning. We may have, I can check to see where we are in, the scientific review process to see if it's something that we are looking at and get back to you.
I appreciate that because it was interesting to, sure, everybody likes to consume food that tastes good, but, for companies to put together chemicals and compounds to enhance the flavor of any kind of food as being just human, you would return to that food source because of its desired taste.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to know if the Heart Association has this on their radar.
So can I make a suggestion or a comment? So when I work with patients with high blood pressure, eliminating salt is a really important thing. And my blood pressure was kind of rising a few years ago when I started to get gray. And so I tried to practice what I preach, which is eliminate salt from the diet. And I found that food was kind of dull. But after 6 months or so, my taste buds readjusted.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went down to McDonald's, or I shouldn't say any names, but went and had some salty French fries, it really tasted bitter. And so I've encouraged patients to understand that there's kind of an adjustment process, which may take up to 6 months, and then you'll be okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no other questions, thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on HCR 20? If you would, come forward and state your name clearly, and maybe if it's a hard one to spell, give the information to the recorder because I don't have your name here. So,
good afternoon. Thanks, Chairman. My name is Jim Foster.
Oh.
Hi. Easy to spell.
Yeah.
And I'm also an American Heart Association volunteer, paramedic, three-plus decades, been involved in resuscitation efforts for a long time. And I'm a resuscitation advocate. I'm here to help run some CPR training for the senators, representatives, and their staff tomorrow and Friday. So I would encourage you all, if you haven't partaken of the training, we'll be in the Farron Camp Room tomorrow from 10 a.m. until in the afternoon. But on this resolution, the Heart Month is an opportunity for us to bring awareness this epidemic problem, cardiovascular disease. It's the number one cause of death for Americans, and people don't realize it because it's not a media event. It's not like a violent death or an accidental death, which is front page media. Even when the death is from cardiovascular disease, it's not frequently identified in the media. So we really need to take an opportunity to educate the public that this is an epidemic problem, and there are things we can do about it. So,
thank you, Jim, for your testimony. I see no questions, so appreciate you coming forward.
Thank you.
Is there anybody online that would like to testify? Nobody online. Is there any discussion in? Well, what we'll do is close public testimony. And is there any discussion from the committee on this bill? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move House concurrent resolution 20 from committee with individual recommendations, and if any accompanying fiscal notes be attached.
Okay, thank you. With that, the bill moves, and we will, I think, is there anything else that anyone would like to bring before the committee? If not, what we'll do is take a recess here at 3:21 and come back together when the Senate starts showing up.
The House and Senate has Social Service Committee. We do have a quorum from the Senate side, and I think all the people that's going to be here from the House side is also here. And so what we can do you want to take the roll, or do you want to say everybody's present, or what?
Oh, let's say everybody's let's take here.
And present on the Senate side, we have Senator Dyson, Senator Eakins, and myself, Betty Davis.
On the House side, we have Representative Miller and myself, Representative Wes Keller. And we've had three, at least, of our members be excused today for various things, and I expect that there will be two more joining us later on.
All right, thank you. We do have a presentation that's going to be given to us by Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. I see you all in your places and ready to go. And we'll just turn it over to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Dul Snobre, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. And with me today, I have Dr. Patrick Cunningham. He sits on our board of directors. I have to my left Dr. Amber Smith, and she's our education specialist here in Juneau. And then next to Amber is Ms. Cheryl Putnam, and she's a family caregiver. I understand we have approximately 1 hour, Senator. Is that correct? Just so I can time my comments.
That is correct.
Thank you. I would like to thank all of you for having us, for taking the time to learn a little bit more about the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska and the services that we provide. We are an organization that has been in operation in Alaska since the early 80s. We incorporated in 1984 as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We have 17 member board of directors, and we do try to have good diversity in terms of geographic representation, because we're a statewide organization, so we have board members throughout the state. Since inception, the organization has always focused on serving the entire state of Alaska. As such, we distribute services primarily through four offices. We have our Anchorage office, we have an office here in Juneau, Fairbanks, Palmer, and actually we have a small office in Kenny Lake that serves that area of the Copper River Basin, Cordova Valdez, etc. So we provide a lot of our education services basically through those offices that serve not only the hubs but also the regions, the respective regions. And in addition to that, for some of our other services, we hire people in the local communities. So just to give you kind of an idea, we just last week we had 117 active in-home workers working throughout the state About 44% of those were in rural areas. So we do hire people right in the smaller communities to serve families in their own home. We serve, as an organization, we serve people of any age with Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. And I like to emphasize of any age, because sometimes people believe that Alzheimer's disease only strikes if you're really old. Well, that's not the case. People can be diagnosed in their 40s and 50s. So we do serve individuals of any age with Alzheimer's disease. We also serve frail elders, frail anyone over the age of 60 with that needs assistance. Without cognitive impairments. So we do serve that group. And then we serve the family caregivers, because, as you know, probably 75% or more of the seniors or people that need assistance live actually in the home. And for the most part, they're assisted by family members or friends, etc. So we want to try and support. Part of our organization's mission is trying to support that situation where people want to remain in their homes and they have assistance from the families, and we want to support that, because if we can even delay the placement of the individual in a more restricted setting, well, that's a good thing. So we serve the family caregivers. Just a tidbit of demographics for you. Our service recipients in FY11 were about 65% clients and 35% caregivers. So that's the breakdown. And then we also serve other professionals. So because this area of Alzheimer's disease and dementia, it requires specialized training for professionals. So assisted living facilities, nursing homes, other senior service providers throughout the state, they do need training. And the workforce is growing as well, the need for that workforce, and they do need the specialized training in dementia care. So we support that workforce in that way. As an organization, we provide a variety of services. In your packets, I have actually an annual report included, and you have a lot of detail there about the kinds of things we do. But we provide services such as care coordination, in-home services, and I described hiring people in the local communities, and then we do education and support services. And that's the area that we're here to talk to you about mostly today, is the education and support services. Sometimes it tends to be an area that is a little bit less tangible to explain. Within that program, we do serve all those populations that I described to you. Let me just touch as well on the what's happening with this population of ADRD, Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. We use the acronym ADRD. The senior population in Alaska is growing very rapidly, has been growing, and will continue growing for a couple more decades at a very, very rapid pace. In fact, the age group of 60 and over in Alaska has been growing at 5 times the national rate. Okay, so that's the group of seniors. Well, because one of the risk factors for Alzheimer's is age, the number of people affected by Alzheimer's disease is also growing proportionately. So 20 years ago, and I have been with this organization for 17 years, so I actually have seen, yeah, a little stability there. I actually have seen the growth. I see it on a daily basis, and I've seen it over the years. But 20 years ago, we estimated there were 2,200 people, more or less, in the state with ADRD. Today, that number has almost tripled to about 6,000, to over 6,000. That's a conservative estimate. ACOA's most recent estimate that I just saw actually puts it at over 7,000. So 6,000 is actually a conservative estimate. And we expect that population is going to pretty much double in this decade. So within 9 or 10 years more, we're going to see that number even double. Now, the numbers themselves, you know, okay, 6,000, then we'll be dealing with 11 or 12,000 people within a decade. Those are high numbers. But what's, to an organization such as ours, I think what's significant is the fast growth of that population. It's, you know, it's over time. I remember about 12 years ago, we were, our Anchorage office was in a different location, and I remember we were holding a family support group. The room was full, and after the group had already started, this couple who used to attend our group came in, and very anxious because they were late for the group. They both had Alzheimer's on both sides of the family and their parents, and they were a little anxious about being late, and I asked, okay, what happened? And he said, well, I've been going around in circles trying to find a parking spot. And at that point, I never forgot that, because at that point I said, okay, we need to do something. We need a bigger facility. Okay, this was maybe just 12 years ago. And we did. We went ahead. The board engaged in a capital campaign. We went out, and we actually purchased a building, and we got ourselves a larger facility. Well, I remember visiting, you know, when I was looking for the space and looking at this big meeting room and thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be fantastic. We have this huge room. We'll have space forever. Well, 10 years ago, we moved there, and now, 10 years later, this room is full again. So I know when I'm up here talking about the numbers growing, it's not very tangible. I see it grow from year to year. So it's pretty significant. What that does for an organization such as ours is, although we are trying to do our best and we're working hard and we're very fortunate to have fantastic staff throughout the state providing the services, it has stretched. We are really stretched thin at this point with the rate of growth being so fast. We have this grant, and you have more information in front of you. This grant that from the state, it's called the ADRD Education Support Program. It's a grant that I perceive as a fairly small grant for $127,000 that pays for so many of these services. And this grant in the last 20 years was increased once by 10%. Now, we have not had a lot of time to be here asking for an increase, and that's certainly are doing. but in 20 years, this grant received one increase of 10%, while the population we serve has almost tripled. And now I'm looking at this decade coming up where the population is almost going to double. This is a program that delays placement of individuals in facilities. I know you're all dealing with the budget realities and what's happening with the Medicaid program and all this, and the cost of assisted living facilities and the cost of nursing homes. However, this is the kind of preventive service that can actually delay that placement, even for just 6 months, let's say. It's not only what people want. I know I'll speak for myself. I certainly would prefer to stay home when the time comes, and if I need assistance, I would prefer to stay in my home and my community as long as possible. So I think from a social perspective, I think it makes sense. From a financial perspective, I believe it makes sense too. We serve, the numbers are in front of you, but we serve a tremendous number of people on an annual basis. We had over 28,000 contacts in FY11. we served, you know, people statewide, and even if we can just delay placement in a higher level of care, even for 6 months only, for 10 people, I think that is an incredible return on investment. So I realize sometimes prevention is, you know, more of a challenge because the crisis is not there, you know. It's not a mandatory item. However, if the state is looking for a good investment, I certainly believe that this is one of those. So with that, unless there are any questions, I would like to pass it along to Amber, and she's going to talk a little bit about the services that we actually provide.
Before we go to the next presenter, we'll take questions at this time.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I could, just a couple real quick. The growth is strictly proportional to the population growth. There's not a increase in the incidence rate of Alzheimer's.
No, I don't believe so. We're still using the same incidence rates per se, but the growth in the senior population.
And then you made reference to the frail elderly that you serve. Approximately how many, what percentage in
frail elders?
Yeah.
In this program that I'm talking about, we actually don't serve frail elders because this is specifically for ADRD.
Okay.
We do serve frail elders, like in the in-home services for respite and assistance with shore services for elders that live alone. So we do those other kinds of services for frail elders. But this program is specifically for Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. It's really the only program of its kind in the state.
Madam Chair. Sorry. Senator Egan.
I guess we all have something to say. We'll start on this end with Senator Egan.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. Dementia and Alzheimer's to you are inclusive? I mean, they're the same?
Dementia is actually an umbrella term, and maybe Dr. Smith will even expand on that.
Okay.
But yes. But dementia is an umbrella term to describe a variety of conditions. Alzheimer's disease is one disease that causes dementia-like symptoms.
Right. So I'm just curious because I had a family member in the Pioneer Home, and she was on different levels, and first it was dementia, then at the end of it became Alzheimer's.
Right.
And was it because of the level that all of a sudden it was diagnosed as Alzheimer's?
Right. Alzheimer's disease is actually only diagnosed with certainty after death through an autopsy.
Okay.
However, it can be diagnosed as a probable Alzheimer's disease.
Because there were residents of the home that were diagnosed with Alzheimer's, then there were others that were diagnosed with dementia.
Right. I think sometimes dementia is used kind of when there is not a diagnosis, you know, but the person has those.
It's fairly obvious. The symptoms are obvious.
And it can be other diseases that can cause dementia, for example, can be Parkinson's or vascular dementia. You know, there are other conditions that can cause dementia, which is the symptoms, let's say. Would you like to add anything to that?
No, I think that was perfect. Dementia is a set of symptoms. Everyone with Alzheimer's has dementia. Everyone with dementia doesn't necessarily have Alzheimer's. We serve people with all forms of progressive dementia. Or all causes of progressive dementia.
Thank you. One more, Madam Chair.
Yes, you may.
Why such a dramatic increase?
In the numbers?
Yes.
I think it's simply because in Alaska, the population, the senior population, is growing so rapidly, five times the rate of the other states. And I think it's been, the reason for that is because so many of us came up 30 years ago and never left. And then now we're aging, and here we are now. So the senior population in Alaska is growing very fast. Now, with Alzheimer's disease, the incidence of Alzheimer's increases with age. So let's say if you're in your 60s, you may have a 10% chance of having Alzheimer's, but if you're if you reach the age of 80, it's 47% chance of having Alzheimer's. So if you reach the age of 80, chances of having Alzheimer's disease is almost 50%. So it's one. So let's all try and stay healthy and do our mental fitness exercises, which is one of the things that we do, and encourage people to live a healthy life. But yes, so the incidence of Alzheimer's increases with age. Age is the greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So that's why the numbers.
So it's not better diagnostics or anything like that?
When I give my testimony, I'll go into that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, finish, guys.
This is very respectful. What do you want to accomplish during this time we have? And at the end of it, besides us being more informed, what do you want us to do? Make it simple, clear, big letters, small words.
Right now? Okay.
I will. I've been married 45 years. I'm used to doing what I'm told.
I like that because I tend to be a direct person too. But number one, I think the education opportunity for us is a great one because that's one of our items in our mission is to educate the public. I think everybody needs to understand what we do, how we do it, where we are, because anytime one of us has a family member, they know to call us. We have this grant that has not been increased. It was increased 10% in 20 years. We would like an increase to that grant.
From the state.
From the state. So it's not the increment request. The increment request is $223,000. For a total grant of $350,000 for the entire state.
Is that in the governor's budget?
It's not. The increment is not in the governor's budget. Right. Although we have also touched bases with the governor's office. And yep. But that is our ultimate goal would be to see that grant brought up to a point where
I got it.
It's adequate.
You want us to be informed, and you want us to help you get some money.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Senator Kelly, do you have another question at this time?
Also,
you have a question?
Yes, ma'am, I do. Thank you. Since Senator Egan asked the question I was originally starting with, and we got a pretty good answer from that. The follow-up question that I wanted on that was, since you mentioned, let's all live a healthy lifestyle, let's, you know, keep our brains working, does your organization also work with preventative treatment? And I'd like to hear a little about that.
Yes. And Dr. Cunningham is actually going to talk a little bit more about that, as is Dr. Smith. So... But, yes, we do run some programs, like even the mental fitness programs that we offer even at senior centers, because there's a lot of research now that shows that good, healthy habits, you know, diet, exercise, et cetera, can, in fact, help. So I will let them, you know, go a little bit more into depth in that, but, yes, we do try to do more prevention types of work. Does that answer?
I'll wait to hear.
We'll wait. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't want to say it all right now.
You've laid the groundwork. Thank you.
Okay. We'll go to the next presenter. If you state your name and.
Yes, I'm Amber Smith. I'm an education specialist with Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. I have an office here in Juneau, but I travel around Southeast providing services. As you've heard, we have offices around the state where counterparts of mine also travel to various communities to provide statewide services. And I wanted to briefly touch on just a few of the services that we provide that are called education and support to make clear what it is that the current grant we have from the state of Alaska is funding and what we'd like to do more of. So, one of the services that we provide, first off, if you know somebody who's concerned about your memory or there's somebody in Alaska who's concerned about their memory, one of our education specialists, like myself, might be the first person they call. And in that phone call, they can state their concerns, what they've noticed, and we can talk about what's the difference between normal aging changes in memory and what might be concerns that should get them to a health care provider. And I want to say that something that I personally really appreciate about that service being grant funded is that that phone call from that person can be anonymous. So if you think about the state of mind that you might be in, if you notice some concerns about your memory, if you notice that you were having some slips, you know, you're all fairly well-known people. Other people in small communities are well-known, and they might want to be able to make a confidential call to talk about those concerns. So I really appreciate that can be anonymous and they can talk about their concerns. So that call and our discussion might be enough to reassure them, but it may be that those concerns are such that they need to come in and do a memory screening. And we provide free memory screenings year-round around the state. It's fast, it's painless. It's a series of questions that takes about 7 or 8 minutes. And it's a chance for the person to further express concerns that they're having, get a memory screening, and then based on their concerns and the results of that screening, either we can provide reassurance and take this weight off their mind, say that this is normal and that your score is normal, or based on their concerns and if they have an abnormal score, we would encourage them to see their healthcare provider. Also in that visit, I can provide some coaching to them on how to approach their healthcare provider. Often people are intimidated, they feel like their doctor's in a rush, it's easy for them to feel like they're concerns are not taken seriously, and so we can coach them through that process and tell them what to expect from their provider. That can lead to them getting an early diagnosis if it is Alzheimer's or a related disorder, or finding out something else is going on. Then, if they do have a diagnosis of some memory loss, another service that our organization provides is early memory loss support group. So you can imagine that somebody with a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or another progressive dementia, what they might be scared, they might feel hopeless, okay? And a support group facilitated by an education specialist at our organization is a chance for them to get together with other people with a similar diagnosis, learn what to expect, do some advanced planning, learn about their diagnosis, and then also find out that they're not alone. Right, to recover their hope and to get some support. So that's another service that we offer. Another type of person that might contact us would be family caregivers of people with a progressive dementia. They can be under a lot of stress. If you know somebody who's cared for a family member, you know that it can be very, very stressful. They can be overwhelmed. They can be looking for resources, and so we can provide that. We can provide resources in the community. We can provide support groups for them so that they can meet other people and not feel isolated. We provide education about the diagnosis, which is a stress reliever in itself, to know more about the disease that you're caring for, know more about how to positively interact with your loved one. In addition to trainings for family caregivers, we provide trainings for professional providers. So I've traveled and trained at all the Pioneer Homes here in Southeast, but we also try to reach out to other organizations to provide professional training. So here in town, I've recently provided a training for residential services staff of the Juno Alliance on Mental Illness. I recently, in December, traveled to Skagway, where Cheryl's mother lives, to provide a training for a volunteer respite organization that they're organizing there. And I spoke on dementia and communication so that they, when they go into someone's home, they can interact with that person in a positive way. Those professional trainings help meet our goal of improving the quality of life of everybody living with a progressive dementia. They also improve the quality of life of the providers, okay, because they know what good quality care is, they're able to provide good quality care, and they're able to have positive interactions with the people they care for. So this reduces their chance of burnout, reduces staff turnover. The last thing I wanted to touch on very briefly is community outreach. So my colleagues and I attend health fairs, we hold awareness events, we speak with community groups such as Rotary, church groups, retired teachers organizations, basically anybody who will invite us. We will go and speak to them about Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, about warning signs, which can help lead people to get an earlier diagnosis. And it also helps reduce the stigma of these diagnoses and the isolation that can be felt both by the people with the diagnosis and their family and friends. So that is just a few of the services that we provide with the grant funding that we're given by the state of Alaska, and we'd like to expand that.
And thank you very much. And before we have another question, I just want to say that a Representative Seaton has joined us. Any questions? Hearing none at this time, we can go to the next presenter.
Thank you, Senator. Can you hear me with the microphone? Am I close enough?
I don't know if it's recorded. They'll have to let us know if that's...
Okay, thank you. My name is Cheryl Putnam. I am the adult caregiver, long-distance caregiver for my mother who lives in Skagway. She has Alzheimer's. She's had it for at least 8 years and I've watched the decline. I live in the nursing home here at Wildflower Court, so if you think caregiving from a distance is a challenge, even if it's only 100 miles, it's an additional challenge to try to do it from a nursing home facility with all that goes on with that and my own issues. I'm fortunate that my family and some family friends have banded together to provide health care services for my mom. I'm the director, so to speak. I'm the problem solver, the sounding board, the whatever is needed. But we have a bank manager, former bank manager, that is a friend of ours, and he handles the finances, which is good because I can't handle my own, much less my mom's. And I handle the health issues. Everybody's got a job, and the nice thing is when we can work together and agree on a plan, or at least agree we need a plan. My mother is 84 years old. She's independent and stubborn as hell, excuse the language, but she's always been that way, and it's not going to change. She's always said that she was going to live in that house until she's died. But she's lived there more than 50 years, and I can understand not wanting to leave that home where she and my dad were. He died 9 years ago. That's her history. That's her connection with her world, the people, the house, everything. She's not leaving, which means she has refused to sign up for the Pioneers Home. And, you know, she just refuses to make any plans at all. You can deal with it when I'm dead. That's not a real good program. Since she has developed dementia, I now have the power of attorney or power of health choices, so I can sign. I have signed her up for these places, but she's so far down on the list. We've got a long way to go, and she doesn't have that long to last at home. We are paying a private person to care for her in her home, and we're going to run out of money before long, which means we need to come up with a plan. And we've got one person in Nome, one in Anchorage, I'm in Juneau, one in Virginia. We're strung out, so everything's by computer or telephone, and that kind of adds to the challenge, but at least it works. And what we have discovered is we didn't even know where to start. So that's where Amber and the organization came in. I started going to the caregivers' trainings and the caregivers' meetings years ago because I'm the one that gets all the complaining phone calls. At 6 o'clock at night, she's going to fire the caregiver from 6 to 8. Mm-hmm. By 9 o'clock when she gets her ice cream, all is well. And you know. But yes, it's like, and God bless her. I'm glad she's still around to do that. And she's doing well. But at the same time, I need some coping skills and some information. I didn't know anything about Alzheimer's. I thought it was a memory issue. It's much more than that. It's logic, it's cognition, it's perception. Right now, we just discovered yesterday, she can't feel the sun or recognize that the sun is shining on her. She was sitting directly in the sunlight. She's saying, I wish the sun would shine. You know? And what we're finding is, as her perception changes, things get more difficult. If the caregiver is out of sight, that means she's not in the house and mom's been abandoned. So this is the kind of thing that, it's daily stuff. Sometimes it's off-the-wall stuff. But it's all stuff that I don't know how to deal with. At least I need some help That's where I call Amber, or my family has had gone to some of the trainings. The caregiver that's there with my mother now is one of them that helped arrange the training for mm-hmm. Skagway. And now, because Amber was able and willing to go up, there are 15 individuals there that weren't there last month that can provide respite. And that's because that caregiver, we've got one caregiver. She's going to burn out, you know, she's already close to it without any respite. So, and they all know my mother. It's a little town. So they now know how to cope with her, what to expect. Before, nobody came home to the house, and she wouldn't leave the house. Now she's going out of the house again. She's going and interacting with the world, but mainly has taken these classes have taken the fear away, the uncertainty and the unknown. And so people are more willing to interact with her, and that's really helping change her social status and activity and her interest in the world. Instead of just watching it go by, she's actually having an interest and enjoying things again, and that's huge. That's like I got a piece of my mother back. And that's because of the programs that the Alzheimer's organization provides and the training. So we came to the point, we've been about this far, about an inch away from having her put into a nursing home of some sort or another several times. And we've always been able to pull something out with help. And this last time we decided, you know, we really have got to get a plan going. And we didn't even know where to start. We had bits and pieces of ideas. And the fellow that has the financial power and I sat down with Amber, and we talked for, must have been close to 2 hours. And we went in there with bits and pieces and maybes and, well, what ifs. And we came out with a plan of action, actual steps that we needed to take and people we needed to go talk to. And I can't tell you what a relief that was. It went from just going in circles to, gee, we got an actual thing we can actually get started on and work on, because the condition continues to deteriorate. The money is going to run out, and we're going to have to have something in place for the next step for her. We didn't have a thing. Now we're working on it, and it's still a challenge in its own ways, but at least we're on the right track. You know, and I just, that's a huge relief. And knowing that there's others out there to ask, if we don't know where to go, who do we contact? What's the next step? Sometimes I'll just call and say, this is what she's doing. What is this? And how do I deal with it? You know. And my sister, who lives in Anchorage, is a social worker, a clinical social worker. And she does commitments and all this kind of stuff. So she can look at mom as a professional and as a daughter. And yet she still goes to the Alzheimer's organization for information and assistance. And that's been, with her knowledge, that's been one of the key pieces to keeping mom in their home as she wants. So the bottom line is, without this organization and the service it provides, mom would have been in a nursing home somewhere. It may have had to have been down south, because there's not that much available here. And it would have devastated her and probably the family. You know, we weren't ready for that. Now we're more prepared for what's ahead, but at the same time, we can, as you said, postpone it. And we have successfully postponed it with the help of the organization, people here. She's become a kind of a city project, a community project. People are really good about helping her out, and that's great. And now that is expanding to that group of volunteers who are going to help other people as well. Because there are other people in that same situation. When I first started looking for someone to care for my mother, there were 4 other people in town looking for the same thing. And there are no services up there except for the clinic. So it's a scramble. But this gives us hope it's going to improve. But I support the funding request, because I can tell, even just on a personal level, we're going to need more services as time goes by. I can see that the baby boomers are aging, and you know, this is part of your increase. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mom and I, our conversations are like Mutt and Jeff, you know. I don't remember half the stuff. So, and it could be early Alzheimer's, or it could be the disease I have. You know, it doesn't matter. I just tell her that I've got medical documentation for the holes in my head. But there may be a time that I need it, or for myself, or for someone else. It's not going to get less. And they're not going to be able to do more with just what they have. They're not going to be able to keep up. And that means people are going to get left behind. And it's really heartbreaking to see somebody that just has no clue what to do and want to help but don't know how. So I thank you for listening and for allowing me to speak and for the time.
All right, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, now we'll go to the doctor.
We'll switch.
Okay, we're going to switch so I can speak directly in the microphone.
Yes.
I prepared 12 minutes of written testimony, given that I have a tendency to ramble and I'm just going to sort of adhere to it. And to respond to Senator Dyson's request, I have two other requests in my testimony in addition to the $233,000 that we're asking for. My name is Patrick Cunningham, and I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Alzheimer's Resource Agency. I'm also an associate professor in the School of Social Work, College of Health at University of Alaska, Anchorage. Thank you for the opportunity of meeting with you to provide information regarding Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. Related to this, I wish to thank Senator Betty Davis for introducing Senate Bill 179, this is a just recent introduced bill, creating missing vulnerable adult prompt response and notification plans. What this is similar to Amber Alert, which you may be aware of for missing children, but targets adults. Victims of Alzheimer's disease and related dementia have a tendency to wander as one of the manifestations of the condition and are at risk. Just last month in Fairbanks, a 63-year-old woman suffering from Alzheimer's disease froze to death after she became disoriented while driving, ran out of gas, and tried walking several miles to seek help. A number of University of Alaska Anchorage bachelor and master social work students, graduates, are employed by Alzheimer's Resource and provide education and support services as well as care coordination. Last July, I attended the Alzheimer's Association International Conference on Alzheimer's Disease in Paris, France. Attending this conference were over 5,000 scientists from all over the world who were engaged in a variety of research ventures seeking the causes of the disease and developing treatment interventions. I had the opportunity of reporting on challenges of care coordination in Alaska, listing 20 challenges and providing 20 solutions. Among the solutions was an emphasis on proactive early detection of Alzheimer's disease and to engage these people in services. I learned at the conference that it is possible to identify individuals who are at risk for the disease 10 years prior to the onset with 80 to 90% accuracy. The identifications of what are called biomarkers that may be measured with brain scans, spinal fluid analysis, blood and cognitive markers, consisting of tests for mild cognitive impairment, are methods that are being used. At the conference, the results of the World's Alzheimer's Report of 2011 provided evidence that early dementia diagnosis coupled with early intervention is cost-effective, as the cost of an earlier diagnosis are more than offset by savings from the use of anti-dementia drugs and delayed institutionalization. Other key findings of that report were when people with dementia are well prepared and supported, their initial feelings of shock, anger, and grief often give way to a sense of reassurance and empowerment. Early diagnosis allows patients to plan ahead while they can still make important decisions about their future care and allows them and their families to access timely, practical advice and support, as well as to access available therapies that may improve their cognition and enhance their quality of life. And most people with early stage dementia would want to know to be told of their diagnosis. This was an international study that people really would like to know ahead of time, although it's still kind of the kiss of death. No one wants a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease because it's a terminal illness. The Alaska Division of Public Health conducts what's called a behavioral risk factor surveillance system. Data are collected on risk and preventive behaviors and chronic disease prevalence that are especially useful for planning, initiating, supporting, and evaluating health promotion and disease prevention programs. Although Alzheimer's disease is listed as the eighth leading cause of death in Alaska and predicted, of course, to increase, it is not referenced in the section dealing with chronic illness. The Center for Disease Control Healthy Aging Program has developed a cognitive impairment module to assess and monitor the public's belief about the impact of cognitive impairment. So far, 20 states have added it to the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. It consists of about 10 questions. The CDC has also developed a caregiver model to examine various aspects of caregiving. It also contains 10 questions. At the moment, Alaska does not have this in the questionnaire. If the Division of Public Health, with whom I have talked, were to include these models in the survey, this would provide service providers like Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska with essential information to assist them in health promotion and disease prevention programs. I learned from that staff that the Director of Public Health needs the request of the legislature to include funding for these two modules to be added, and I would certainly encourage your support of that. So that's one. The other one is to ask you to pass the legislation that Senator Davis introduced. To date, treatment interventions for Alzheimer's disease and related dementia consist of pharmacological and non-pharmacological approaches. Some medication has been found to delay the progression of the disease if identified early, but not cure it. There's no cures known at this point. Among the non-pharmacological approaches are prevention of risk factors, psychological interventions, diet, exercise, and cognitively stimulating activities. Some experts are advocating for what's called a paradigm shift away from the current approach of treating symptoms as they emerge to target the disease in its very earliest preclinical stages. That's even before the onset has occurred. These are individuals with mild cognitive impairment who have not progressed to Alzheimer's disease. This offers the best opportunity to date to prevent or substantially delay the disease. A study reported at the conference that I attended stated that up to 50% of Alzheimer's disease cases are potentially attributable to 7 preventable risk factors. These include smoking, physical inactivity, midlife obesity, midlife hypertension, depression, diabetes, and cognitive inactivity. If you're engaged in that, then your risk for getting Alzheimer's disease is much greater, and these could be preventable. This is where interventions to increase education that the program offers and physical activity and reduce smoking rates and depression could potentially have a dramatic impact on Alzheimer's prevalence over time. At the national level, government action on Alzheimer's disease does not reflect the expanding human, social, and economic burden of the disease for American families. Today, there are 5.4 million Americans with Alzheimer's disease, and by 2050, as many as 16 million Americans will have Alzheimer's disease, and the cost of care will surpass $1 trillion annually. There is currently no cure for Alzheimer's disease and no disease-modifying treatment. So the current best hope lies in identifying prevention strategies. Psychological interventions target behavior and psychological symptoms of dementia. The most obvious are agitation, aggression, mood disorder, and psychosis. Some examples of interventions are art, music, activity, validation therapy. In terms of diet, a study of relatively healthy adults found that those adults with diets rich in several vitamins, B, C, D, E, and omega-3 fatty acids, had better cognitive function and less brain atrophy associated with Alzheimer's than their peers with diets less abundant in these nutrients. those who ate a diet rich in red meat, certainly love it, full-fat dairy foods were more likely to get Alzheimer's disease compared to those who ate a diet consisting mostly of nuts, poultry, fish, fruits, and vegetables. A chemistry professor at where I teach, UAA, has been recently rewarded a grant to study the effect of bog blueberries on dementia. Curcumin, derived from the spice turmeric that you usually have in curries, reduces amyloid accumulation and synaptic marker loss associated with Alzheimer's disease. There is currently a clinical trial underway to determine the effect of the herb sage, interesting, as a potential treatment for the disease. Sage has been demonstrated to enhance memory and mental function. I might add, all of these interventions have no side effects that the chemicals, the synthetic drugs have. You just medicate three times a day, but what you're eating is just good superfoods, as they call them. Mounting evidence suggests that physical activity may have benefits beyond a healthy heart and body weight. Through the past several years, population studies suggested that exercise, which raises your heart rate for at least 30 minutes several times a week, can lower your risk of Alzheimer's. A number of clinical trials are examining the effect of aerobic fitness training on human cognition, brain structure, and brain functioning in older adults. The use of Nintendo gaming console called Wii Fit is being tested for aerobic strength training and balance improvement with individuals with a diagnosis of mild dementia. A nurse at the University of Washington School of Nursing is evaluating an exercise and health promotion program for older adults with mild memory loss. And lastly, an even more promising program include exercise and mental activity. The participants rode recumbent bikes for an average of 3 rides per week. Plus, they had a virtual reality display that allowed them to ride in a 3-dimensional landscape and race against a ghost rider based on their own last best performance. In a group of healthy elderly individuals, researchers found that greater participation throughout life in cognitively stimulating activities, such as reading, writing, and playing challenging games, were associated with less beta amyloid deposition in the brain, and that's a hallmark of AD. There's two chemicals they've been able to identify, one that produces the tangles and one that produces the plaques. They can use tests and find whether that's in people if they have it, and they can identify that much earlier so people can be involved in preventive programs regarding that. Other cognitive activities for patients is to engage them in activities of recollection, which are not only general in nature, but can focus on memory skills that can be directly helpful to them in activities of daily living, such as where they left the purse or wallet, or what is their living address. These memory exercises are also beneficial to caregivers who often get frustrated with the memory deficits of their family member. One of the functions of the agency's education and support program is to provide education to professionals, as was mentioned. Since it is the primary health care provider who bears the responsibility for managing most of the Alzheimer's disease patients, there clearly is a need to assist these clinicians with best practice guidelines. When best prepared, the provider will be able to make the appropriate diagnosis in a timely manner, inform the patient so that crisis can be avoided, therapeutic and rehabilitative support can be initiated, and the patient can be adequately informed so that choices can be made for the future while decision-making capability remains. There's sometimes a nihilistic attitude in terms of healthcare providers that Alzheimer's is a terminal illness. They don't want to avoid it. They don't want to break the news. And so we need to educate healthcare providers to be aware of it, make the diagnosis, and make the referral to an agency such as Alzheimer's Resource. The patient and family face many short-term and long-term decisions that are best made on knowledge of the disease process, the range of symptom progression, and the ultimate prognosis. This would include making decisions about advanced directives to physicians, appointing a durable medical power of attorney, discussing end-of-life decisions with whoever will be designated the surrogate decision maker in future living arrangements. This is where a referral to the agency education or support services is warranted. In terms of an economy of scale, when you consider the services provided by this program, it becomes very cost-effective when it may prevent the development of Alzheimer's disease or delay it, resulting in the individual remaining in their home and community for as long as possible, thus extending their quality of life and remaining out of assisted living facility or nursing home. If the services the program provides delays for 1 year a nursing home admission for two clients, it results in a savings of well over $200,000. That's just two clients. When you consider this, the request of $233,000 additional funding for the grant, in my opinion, is a very modest one. Even more funding would enable an even greater outreach program to occur. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time you were.
I want to take this opportunity to thank you for presenting to us valuable information, and we also want to thank you for the services that you are providing. The education, the training, and all the input that you're given throughout the state is quite valuable. I hope that, let's get one thing straight. You have a base amount of money, and how much is that that you're getting from Health and Social Services? Is that where it is?
Yeah.
And how much are you getting?
$127,000 right now.
And you haven't had an increase since?
In 20 years, we received one increase of 10%.
Okay. You did request that increase through the governor's budget. It did not get there?
This time, this year.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Correct.
And so at this time, while you're down here, what you're doing is making your stops to the finance sub-finance committee on the House side,
yes,
to share what your concerns are.
Yes.
You're doing that.
Yes.
Yes. That's one way that maybe it might be addressed, and there might be some other things that we could assist you in. But I do believe that you provide a great service, and I am familiar with Alzheimer's. My mother had Alzheimer's. And we were able to keep her at home for many, many years, but it eventually got to the point where we could no longer provide that service to her. And you do need to have something for the caregivers, because it is a load, a heavy burden, a heavy load on you to have to provide that care. And most of the nursing homes, we were looking for a place to put our mother. My sister might talk to the director or whoever, and I'd go around looking to see what they had in the back rooms. And many times you would find people with nets on them or strapped to their bed, and those were the Alzheimer's patients. And so we've come a long ways, but there's a lot of more work to be done. And I just want to thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments that you'd like to make? Yes.
Yes, thank you, madam.
You're welcome.
I'll direct this to Dr. Cunningham. Could you repeat those vitamins that you mentioned?
Yes.
And I'm trying to ascertain exactly how many of them I need. Is this a preventative? Is this,
yes.
If there are symptoms that have already shown up, will this delay them, ameliorate them?
Hopefully it will. There's certainly a lot more added research that needs to happen, and there's lots, as I say, clinical trials. More people outside of this country are doing more than what we're doing in this country. France has set aside $2 billion. That's, I think, why we had the conference in France, set aside $2 billion for research. So they're trying to do that. These vitamins are best taken from the foods that produce them better than taking them by pill, but these are vitamins B, C, D, and E, and those omega-3 fatty acids, or one.
Okay.
The other one, you can get curcumin in a pill, or you can use turmeric spice as a way of doing that, and eating berries. There's identifying now more superfoods that people can use for a variety of maladies. There's some that are cancer-eating, such as stewed tomatoes and artichokes and strawberries. And, these are people outside of the medical field, because pharmaceutical companies can't make a whole lot of money. on these products. So they create synthetics where they can make more money. But these are some areas that have been investigated. These are called non-pharmacological kinds of approaches, particularly the diet, the exercise, the memory sort of stimulation as well. All of those may be able to prevent the onset or at least slow it down.
And I did make note that it seems to me that the overwhelming number of these things are things that can be and should be grown more prevalently right here in Alaska.
Yes.
We don't have to import these.
Yeah, that black blueberry, I mean, that's something they're trying to see whether the properties within that does have that positive impact.
And if I might, Madam Chair, I have one more. I'm looking for an opinion here, and I won't hold you to it. It seemed to me that a few years ago when there was rather a large news event that we had run into our first case of domestically verified bovine spongiform encephalopathy, better known as mad cow disease.
Yes, yes.
It created quite a stir, you know, as far as, oh my goodness, you know, now that may be somewhere inherent in our meat supply, et cetera. But I just shortly thereafter read, I thought it was a study either from Sweden or from Great Britain, indicating that they were relating the Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, not as a unique item, but it's the same. And the statement of this study was that 25% to 30% of those Alzheimer's cases are actually misdiagnosed. It's really from our food supply. It is actually that we have eaten this stuff from mad cow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wondered if you had read that, if there's any further study that's been done on it.
Not that I'm familiar with, other than what you mentioned in terms of paying attention to that. Yeah.
Thank you.
And because it's so difficult to diagnose dementia, sometimes people have depression and it sort of exhibit the same kinds of feelings. So there needs to be a lot more focus on trying to come up with real good diagnoses and identify people earlier. It's really important. And also look at our whole food chain and all those toxics that we, and what kind of impact that has on them. And right now they have no idea what causes Alzheimer's. You know, they look at factors that the longer you live, the chances are, but what really causes it, they're still looking. They're looking at such, all those 5,000 scientists are looking at it from all kinds of areas, and as yet haven't really focused on it. But it's heartening to see that many people that are really trying to find a cure.
Eat salmon and eat moose.
Just to make sure that it's clear that Alzheimer's disease is a separate disease than Creutzfeldt-Jakob.
Yeah,
or those are separate causes of dementia.
Well, that was the nature, and that's what I've always heard. But
right,
this particular
those are separate diseases.
Well, this one was indicating that while they are separate, mm-hmm. that in many cases they've been misdiagnosed.
That is
someone is, you know, say this is Alzheimer's. We prefer, you know, death occurs, an autopsy is performed, and they say, oh, no, you know, 20% to 30% of these cases were, in fact, Creutzfeldt. I can't say it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That other disease.
Yes. Yeah. CJD
is easier, thank you, which, again, is, you know, related to and or, in this particular study, I got the impression, same as mad cow disease. Mm. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you...
Yeah, it'd probably be a fuzzy question, but the biomarkers, do they indicate definitely, or are those biomarkers also there for other kinds of, like, say, dementia without Alzheimer's? I'm just really curious because as I look at the prevention, that's a stunning statement that 50% they determined is preventable by volitional that a human being can take.
Changes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to relate it back to the biomarker statement.
They're pretty clear that these two biomarkers really, the presence really does result in the progression of Alzheimer's disease. It's sort of invasive to do that. You just can't get it to give a blood test. They have to do brain scans, and they also have to do spinal tap and maybe look at blood in order to do that. But it looks like, and when they do autopsies, that's what they see in the brain, these plaques and tangles that are caused by these particular brain chemicals, from my understanding of it. And so they've been able to be a little bit more proficient now in being able to give tests in order to identify the presence of them. Whether or not that you have them eventually results in you getting Alzheimer's disease, it may not necessarily be the case.
Right, right.
So it's still kind of elusive.
Thanks.
In pinpointing it down.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I want to thank Representative Seaton for providing us last year of the entire legislature with vitamin D. He only has a few more to go. So anyway, I do appreciate that. Yes. That was great. And it, my dentist was very happy that I was taking so much vitamin D. I just want to congratulate you folks for the compassion you show, the compassion through your organization and your training. I think Alaska can be very proud, especially through our Piter Home organizations and facilities in my community like Wildflower Court. I mean, it's an absolute, I couldn't do it. I mean, most of us couldn't do care like that, and I just applaud everybody that's involved in treating residents with Alzheimer's and dementia. I mean, it's just it's so sad when they get it, but it's such a great benefit to the citizens of this community that workers have the compassion to treat those folks. And I applaud you and everybody that's involved for doing that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. Yes, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was very happy to hear the presentation focus on prevention. And hopefully you're aware that the entire legislature unanimously in the House and the Senate last year passed HCR 5, which was calling on the state to go to a prevention of disease model for healthcare and making people aware of vitamin D and some of those things that we, those peer-reviewed scientific studies that we had looked at were the effectiveness on depression, especially seasonal affective disorder, diabetes, a 30% reduction in diabetes, and also there was one study on Alzheimer's as well. And very happy that we're all tending to focus on prevention now instead of saying we're going to spend just monies on cures. And I didn't know whether you were aware, but Fraser Health in Canada, BC Canada, the largest senior residential provider of health care, has just instituted 20,000 IUs per week as a weekly dose of vitamin D to all patients in their senior residential care, because they knew that people in the north, and they found out through testing, everyone was insufficient in vitamin D, and their cost-benefit estimate was that just by having sufficient vitamin D, they had saved 10 to 25% of the fractures that occur. And one fracture pays for the entire program. So the benefits all the way around are significant, and I'm sure glad that you're focusing on prevention with this. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, you're welcome. If there's no other remarks at this time, we're just going to adjourn, and we thank you once more
for
presenting to us.
Very nice.